Welcome to Val F.B. Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English language Val F.B. Stuttgart fan podcast where reviews are unofficial, uninformed, and usually unprepared. But we are prepared for episode 64 today because straight from the West Coast, joining me as always for his 29th episode is Matt. Matt, you are a world traveler. Thanks for taking a little bit of time out of your day to talk to a lowly podcast.
Thrilled to be here with you, Travis. How you doing?
We're doing pretty good, pretty good. We had the Halloween weekend here in the States. My wife goes a little bit bonkers on it, so our house was the house that everybody would go to, and we became dangerously the house that hands out the big candy bars.
Ooh.
I'm worried about the precedent this is setting.
Does get a reputation that were kids, you could hear them shouting on the street to go to a certain house because they were giving out full-size bars.
On the flip side, I wore my Christian Gettner jersey as my costume this year.
That's pretty scary.
That's what some people on Twitter said. That might be a little bit frightening there. Yo, Matt, we do the number game all the time. I want to do the number game with you again. This is episode 29 for you. Some famous numbers. Are you ready for 29?
Let's do it.
Momo Sisse. That's it, Matt. That's all you got.
At once both my favorite and least favorite 29 on the roster, and somebody who brings absolutely no memories to my head.
No, he played 5 games for Stuttgart according to Transfermarkt. He's currently on loan in the Polish second division for Krakow. He's played in 11 of their matches. I think I've spoken about Momo Sisse a little bit too much already in this podcast. Should we move on?
We've already covered him as much as he saw the field well in Stuttgart. Let's continue.
Yeah, sorry, Mo. If you come back, we love you. But this episode, part one, we're going to talk about the huge dramatic victory versus our southern German friends, Augsburg. Then in part two, we're going to get some help with Hannes and try to understand if the Augsburg match was actually a derby or just another game. Part three, we got some headlines and questions. I'm excited about this one because I think for the first time, Matt, you and I will agree to just eviscerate some poor guy who actually tried to contribute to the show with a question. And then part four, we got our predictions for some more big matches. Matt, what do you say? You ready to get going?
I am ready to eviscerate a well-meaning listener of ours. Let's do this.
That's right. That's what you get, Good Samaritan. Part one, Matt, the big match, Augsburg was traveling to Stuttgart. Over 40,000 fans were there. First off, we say this all the time, but shout out to the home supporters. Did you get a chance as the match was going on ESPN Plus in the States to check out the choreography that was in the curve?
I did not see the choreography. What did I miss?
Yeah, give yourself a chance to check it out. They did, like, it was almost over a minute, a variety of different images and kind of cartoons, and I think they were supporting the ultras in the background there, but they once again outdid themselves, even to the point where after we went down early yet again, I didn't hear many whistles. I mean, it's not easy supporting this club from a distance. I think it's even more difficult supporting this club from actually Stuttgart, but just once again, hats off to the supporters because their support didn't waver at all. And I think we've said multiple times that if this team is going to have success this year, they're going to need the help of the home crowd. And boy, howdy, they brought it again.
Absolutely. And it's a lot of fun to just see those choreos when we get to see them, even if sometimes it's hard to read what's written on the signs and understand them as people who have horrible German skills. But just the amount of time and effort these folks put in to supporting this team, it's really inspirational and makes me feel less bad about having to wake up early on a Saturday morning to watch a game.
That is true. Our contribution is, I don't know, whatever, the $10 a month we pay to ESPN Plus. Yeah. That's pretty much it. But so the match ended, as everybody knows, in another dramatic late extra added time goal. To get the victory here. We're now even with Augsburg, 11 wins, 11 losses. Here's the crazy thing, Matt. Kicker did their players of the week. 3 Stuttgart players were on that team. Borna Sosa, Seru Girasi, and Valdemar Anton. I mean, that's enough just to get you excited right there. That hasn't happened, you know, all season. The OFC man of the match was Borna Sosa. I thought it was going to be Valdemar Anton because of that dramatic goal, but Borna was playing out of his mind. I know we're kind of giving the ending away early, but this was a much needed result in classic Stuttgart fashion. The guys, we'll get into this a little bit more detail in a minute, but the guys, there was some fantastic play on Saturday.
It was really impressive to see, especially the attacking third, which is something that we've struggled with so much. I don't have such kind things to say about our defensive structure, but the attack was great. We saw some movement in the box, which is something I've been banging on about for what feels like a decade. Guys working to try and get open some to give their teammates options. It was really nice. And Sosa, just he played his role perfectly. And even without having Sasa Kalajic in the middle to be a lightning rod for crosses in, he was putting balls in the smart spots and the dangerous spots and forcing Augsburg to deal with them. And Augsburg did not deal with them.
He had 20 crosses in this match.
That's insane.
And he was accurate, according to the websites, on 8 of them. It was the most crosses by far. The second most, I think he had 15 against Frankfurt, which was a loss. So you can't exactly equate, okay, if Borna crosses all the time, that equates to a win. But his crosses were on target. His corner kicks were on target. It was like watching. One of the newspapers said Sosa, the cross got it, I think maybe it was. But he played, you know, lights out. And it was interesting because as the match started, two of the players that have been really impactful weren't in. You know, Enzo Melo was out because of muscular injury. Mm-hmm. Dino Mavropanos was out because of muscular injury. So Furyk came in. Ito came back in, which I was glad to see. Thiago was out and Luka instead was in. But the big thing that kind of struck me was it looked like we were playing more of a 4-4-2 with Anton on the right back spot. Did you see that too? It just seemed like a different setup.
Yeah, so we were texting about this a little bit during the game, and I went back and watched a little bit more and was thinking about this some more, and it felt like we were set up as a three-man back, but with Endo swapping out with other guys in that third center back role. So I presume this was on purpose, but it's kind of brilliant because whoever's in the spot to make the run can make the run. And the other three guys hold court in the back. And that opened Endo or Anton up particularly for a number of really good, really dangerous runs that I don't think he normally makes.
And I don't know how much of that was a surprise to Augsburg. Like, they weren't expecting that to happen. Because I know Endo's original position was center back, but he was, you know, deemed to be too small to play that, and they moved him up a bit. And I thought Anton had played some center mid at some point in his career, but maybe it was just they threw Augsburg off a little bit. They weren't expecting it. Cause I certainly, you know, I didn't see that coming.
I didn't either, but as I was thinking about it, there were times last season when we saw Ito make runs or we saw Mavropanos make runs and they looked to be structured, especially in the back half of the season. You'd see Carazor drop back or Endo drop back and Anton would make, or not Anton, Mavropanos would make one of his big runs. Or Ito scored that. There was a ridiculous goal he scored. And it was one of those like shifting personnel. So I don't know if this is something they've been working on that just Wimmer's really emphasizing now, or they've gone away from it and now they're going back to it. But it's really cool. And I'm not sure it's something I've seen much in football before.
The thing that I liked in this match, and they weren't able to do it all the time, but they seemed to transition much quicker than we've seen much of the season. And I forget what Pellegrino used to call it. There's a particular phrase, but you know, we don't look up anything on the show, so we're not going to start now, but some kind of transition thing where you transition from offense to defense or something. I don't know what it was, but it seemed like they actually did it, you know, this time. And not all the time. The game bogged down a little bit, you know, around halftime, but it seemed like for the first time in a long time, they were moving quickly. They were getting into the last third quickly.
Yeah, and I think that the defensive shifting contributed to that. I also think Chris Furich very quietly had a very, very good game. He didn't show up on the scoreboard. He didn't do a lot of big flashy things, but he was regularly in a position where he was helping with that transition. He was making one or two passes through the midfield to open players up, where he was making good runs to create space. And that's something he did a lot last season that we got really excited about him for, that he has not done at all this season. So it was really good to see him back contributing in that way.
And one of the words you use is excited. You might be as excited as I am to know that Stuttgart has set history yet again, at least league history for this season, is that this is the seventh match that we have given up a goal in the first 15 minutes, which extends our Bundesliga lead against all comers. So there's only been, what, 11, 12 matches, and we've given up a goal in the first 15 minutes in seven of them. Let's break that down. Dan Axel, what's happening?
I'm going to go out on a limb, first of all, and say that's bad. I'm also I think the commentator said during the game that Augsburg had not given up a first 15-minute goal at all this season. So that wasn't making me feel great, but let's get to the man of the moment. Dan Axel, man, had a rough outing.
There's a lot to like based on the tangibles of his physicality and his pedigree. And if much like Dino, he was injury prone. And if he can get over his injuries, everybody says this guy is a legit starting Bundesliga center back. I don't know if he's rusty, if he's still trying to get back into a groove. In hindsight, it is really kind of bizarre that he was brand new to the club and almost 2 weeks later he's starting. And especially on the defense, which I would assume requires a lot of communication. And then especially for a guy, Hiroki Ito, who we thought he's not our problem. And then to see what happened that fourth minute, I think that's one of the things that kind of drives me a little crazy is how quickly he got into the lineup. And then it seems like one of his go-to moves is to let the ball go out of bounds, you know, so we get possession of it and just kind of try to block the guy who's trying to get the ball. But Niederlechner just, I don't know, shoved him the wrong way and he was off to the races.
Well, to do that maneuver, you've got to A, get to the ball first, and B, be in a position to set yourself up to box out like in a basketball game. And he didn't get to the ball first. He did not have an opportunity to box out. And not only that, but he could not, if you were making a video of how to explain to defenders how not to defend a situation like he had, you could just play that. He was on the outside of the attacker, leaving the attacker between him and the net. So even if he gets there late, he's not in a position to do anything to recover. He's late getting to the ball. He's not in a bad position once he gets there to do anything effective. Even if the defender's not, or the attacker is not there, he can't do anything with that ball because he's coming at it from a weird angle from the touchline. And it just, like, it was mind-bogglingly bad. And then on top of that, Muller played that shot horrendously.
I was hoping you'd get a chance to talk about Mueller for
him. Yeah, you lob me a softball, Travis. I'm going to take a swing. He's getting himself into position, and then as the attacker is coming, he just hits the dirt. Like, it doesn't do anything to, typically you want to make yourself big. You want to put yourself in a position to cut off an attacker's angle. The attacker's already at a ridiculously bad angle. And Mueller's response is, I know, I'll lay down. That'll stop him.
I was going to take Mueller's side on this one because I did think it was a really fantastic shot by Niederlechner, who, by the way, if he plays for my club, I love that guy. But if he plays for another club, I despise that guy. He just has that it factor.
Yeah, and let's not take anything away from Niederlechner. That was a great shot. He did everything he needed to do to punish Dan Axel for his stupidity. and then put himself in a position where he had one spot to put the ball to be successful, and he put it there. And that's more than we can say about some of our guys this season. But Mueller did nothing to even make that hard for him. Like, if Mueller's, you know, up on his feet and in a position to try and make a save, or even trying to get like the one knee down kind of maneuver with his arms in the air to make life difficult, you kind of just got to tip your hat to Niederreichner. But he laid down.
It is funny. In hindsight, I'm thinking back about that play, and you're right. The move would have seemed to either gone to his left or his right to cut off one of those two angles. Instead, he went low. And Niederreichner put away. It was a nice shot into the corner. It was just a rough sequence of events. And I know that we'll get to Danny Axel a little bit later because somebody asked a really good question about it. But I know the knock on him is that he makes one mistake a game. Okay. And we've definitely seen that. I think maybe we'll save this for the second part or the third part when we get into questions. But it seemed like he had a lot of mistakes throughout that first half in particular. Somebody who didn't have a lot of mistakes, who played just amazing, was Borna Sosa. He looked like the old Borna. I already mentioned he had 20 crosses. We ended up having 29 shots during this game. That's
unreal for our team.
That's nuts. And so he has a beautiful cross into the box. Seiru Girassi puts it away with a beautiful header. I think Endo could have gotten to it too. It's just one of those crosses that we saw all the last couple of years that went in. And so, you know, we're immediately back in it. And you're feeling, okay, we got a chance in this one. Any thoughts on that goal? Any thoughts on Borna? Any thoughts on the way the rest of that first half went? Because it's going to end 1-1.
Kind of made me wonder if Augsburg had watched any film on Stuttgart over the last year and a half. That was a bread and butter play for us. And the guy, I can't remember who it was, but the defender who was in front of Girassi, he pulled a Stuttgart defender and he just stopped. He wasn't up in the air trying to go after that header. He just stopped, was in like this kind of half crouch. I'm getting ready to play defense position. And Girassi went up and had a beautiful header. Great, like, well done, Girassi. Great cross. But I was watching, like, what are you doing, dude?
Yeah, it was funny because Borna was also doing some crosses on the right side. So they were trying to mix it up a little bit. And he was just having a ton of success with that. So it's 1-1, we're going into halftime. The game kind of bogs down the first like 10, 15 minutes of that second half. And then there's the handball or the non-handball. And the Augsburg coach, player, director of sport, we're all talking about it after the match. So what happens? There's a ball into the box. Borna tries to get clear of the ball. His hand comes out, clearly touches his arm, but it was as he was going backwards. So VAR said, nope, it's all good. Any thoughts on, did we get lucky there? Was that?
I think it was the right call. I think there's an argument to be made that his arm was in an unnatural position because it was straight out, but it was also, he was kind of tipping sideways in the air and it was very clearly out for balance. And didn't it, like, it got deflected. It wasn't like the ball's coming at him and then he sticks his arm out.
Right.
Like he was making a play and it deflected and it didn't hit down on his hand. It hit like by his elbow. So I can see somebody being upset about that. If it had been the other way, I don't know, I might have been irritated about it, but I don't think you can give that as a handball.
I think before this season, I would have been like, yeah, that's a handball. But this season has been such a mess with what a handball is and how it has to be in an unnatural position, but it also has to be intentional in some way. And it certainly wasn't intentional. He didn't even see the ball coming. So by that letter of the law, it's clearly not a handball. But a year ago, I would have been like, oh boy, here we go. You know, that's a penalty because it touches. So it's almost like VAR. There's a lot of incongruity and a lot of gray area now with handballs. And you see it every week. Happily, luckily, we had a little bit of luck on our side. And then from that point forward, Matt, I watched that last half hour a couple times because especially once you know the result, you can kind of see the big picture of stuff and you can really appreciate the work ethic and the effort and the amount of chances, knowing that it's eventually going to be realized in real time. Mm-hmm. You're just like, come on, this is the same thing over again. There were so many, I mean, we wrote them down in our notes, but you had Endo, you had twice, you had Jirasi, Luga had a couple. Ito had an amazing chance. Luga had one off the crossbar, and then another one where the backup Augsburg goalie just got his paw out at the right time to get it.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of want to take a second before we get into the Thiago pass to Anton for that goal is, as you're watching that happen, especially after you knew the result, I mean, is this just a case of more Stuttgart bad luck, or is the Turner, is the corner starting to be turned with some of this?
It felt a little bit like we were starting to turn a corner. Like the players are starting to believe that if they take these chances, things are going to happen. And it's not that we're all cursed to an eternity of doom and gloom. I do think that, you know, much like with the, you know, the game a couple weeks ago against Bochum, Augsburg's poor defending played into this. I'm going to take and enjoy the good attacking that Stuttgart did. We put ourselves in positions to be successful over and over again. But Augsburg, I wrote down a couple times, I don't normally take notes during the game, but I felt compelled to this time, made a couple notes of just like, Augsburg's not pushing on us and not pressing us to make mistakes. And that's really fortunate. But as I said earlier, you know, we're making moves in the attacking zone. We're, you know, we have some fluidity and guys moving into empty spaces instead of everybody standing and watching Sosa with the ball and going, well, what's he going to do now?
Let's talk about, because we will touch on Luca Pfeiffer and Danny Axel and some of the players in part three when we deal with some of the questions. But I do want to get to, so Thiago comes on for Silas, and Silas did not look happy when he got subbed off around the 65th minute mark or whatever the case was. He didn't look pretty happy about that. And Thiago's been in a bit of a slump, but he had just a beautiful back pass to Anton. It was funny because Captain Armadillo said that wasn't a beautiful back pass. That was an irrational play that could have gone really bad. That was just lucky to go. I'm going to politely disagree. We've been talking about how we have to improve our transition play. And this is a case of our players who are creative, being creative, and a result, you know, coming out of that. I thought from Luca Pfeiffer getting the ball to giving it to Ahamada, to giving it to Thiago giving it to Anton, it was just a series of, it was very direct, and it looked like it was very planned. And then Thiago had that little bit of flair that you need for a result to happen, and boom. So I don't know if you want to touch on, you know, the Thiago pass, Anton's ill-fated celebration where the poor guy wasn't able to celebrate his goal. What do you got?
I want to say first the Thiago move was gutsy, and it takes a level of confidence and a level of, you know, effort. Let's see what happens. To make a move like that in the middle of a very important Bundesliga game where your team's got all the attack, all the pressure, and really the pressure was on us to win that, not on Augsburg. So good on you, Thiago. I will also disagree with our very good captain, the captainist of Armadillos. you gotta try and make that play. That's creative, gutsy stuff like that is what gets you goals. And what's the downside to it? If he messes that up, it's a turnover in the box. We've got Augsburg pinned deep, and they've got to do something to make something out of that. And it's not like we had everybody in the kitchen sink down on the attacking end and a turnover was fatal. I think that's fine. Other situations, yeah, maybe that would have been ill-advised, but it was a beautiful little maneuver and something that clearly the Fighting Pineapples did not see coming. And then for Anton to finish that off and then immediately die, sacrificed himself to the Schwabian deities on the field so that we may feel joy. That was great. And everybody around him was celebrating and trying to figure out what he was doing. They're like, oh crap, he's hurt.
But we just won.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt great. If you've ever had a cramp before, you're like, you can't do anything. You're just stuck there dealing mm-hmm. with that. But to do that in front of, I don't know how many people are in the curve, 10,000 people, when you so desperately want to celebrate, because I don't think he scored a goal since the previous Augsburg match at home. So they're his team. No, it was just great to see that finish. It was great to see the curve get excited. It was great to see the players get excited. There was a couple pictures of Vimmer jumping in the air, Luka jumping in the air. They looked like they could be NBA players. They were so excited at how high they were jumping. It was great to see the curve excited. It was great to see the players excited. It was just a great finish to really what had been a great last 30 minutes of that match. It was an exciting match, a good result for us, obviously. Any last takeaway before we kind of look at the other results that happened around the league?
You mentioned the TIFOs and the celebrations before the game. It was really nice to get that game winner right in front of the curve, give all those people who put all that hard work in and have been carrying this team all season long a moment to celebrate right in front of their faces. And the only downside was the hilarity of Anton having to die on the field to make it happen.
Oh, the poor guy.
No, it was absolutely wonderful.
And then it was funny because you could tell it was a cramp because once he does recover a little bit, they ask him if he wants to come out. And you can see they show him saying, no, I'm good. And so he's back. And then they sub him out. And then he's like, oh, and he starts grabbing his hamstring, trying to milk it as much as he can to get out. The classic, Bundesliga time wasting there. Mm-hmm. So good for him. You know, there'd been some talk about him getting benched and at least among some of the supporter groups and all that stuff. So it's just awesome to see the result there. And we had some really good results around the Bundesliga. So Friday, Hertha lost to Bremen, which is the team of destiny this year. Bremen is just, they're that team this year that shouldn't be good, but it's going to end up eighth or ninth this year.
It's crazy how great they're doing. And I'm just really appreciative of them for keeping Hertha in check for us. Because if Hertha is another 3 points up, things are looking a little more grim.
Yeah. So thank you. Thank you, Bremen, for that. Then Wolfsburg destroyed Bochum, which we needed. You know, Wolfsburg's right with us, but we need Bochum to stay down. Leipzig, this is the weird one, destroyed Leverkusen. So Leverkusen's coach bump with Xabi Alonso they got that one win and they haven't got anything really since then. So they're struggling. And then Freiburg took care of Schalke for us. So all in all, we don't get a lot of great weekends. This is a pretty good weekend for us.
That was pretty solid. I'm a little surprised that Leverkusen's already kind of back down from the coach bounce. It's a huge ask to put him in that position and say, go ahead and rescue our club. This isn't a Hoop Stevens who's done it 36 times. This is a brand new guy told to fix the sinking Titanic.
So that means that Bayer falls back to 15th place. So Schalke is 18th. Bochum is 17th. Bayer Leverkusen is shockingly in the relegation playoff place, so 16th, which means we jump to 15. Hertha has 11 points as well, but they're better than us on goal difference. So they're at 14. I'm sorry, they're at 15. Augsburg is at 14, and Wolfsburg is at 13, I believe. Did I get that right? Did I mess that all up?
Nope, you shifted everybody a number back. Okay. So we're at 15, Hertha's at 14, Augsburg's at 13.
You know what? If this was a real podcast, man, I would edit that out.
We don't edit.
Yeah, but instead, I'm just going to reprimand you for correcting me.
I should know better than to bring facts to this outfit.
You know, because of that, I'm going to force you into the timeout room, and I'm going to talk to somebody who actually knows something. I'm going to get some help from Hannes. So, Matt, before we get into this, do you think Augsburg is a derby? Because what I'm going to ask Hannes is, what is a derby, and is the Augsburg match a derby for Stuttgart? What are your thoughts?
Kind of the natural geographic derby for us would be Freiburg, but we've talked about before, Freiburg's not a team that anybody gets worked up about. So it's definitely not Bayern Munich, even though I've heard that referred to as the Sud derby. That's not happening. People are trying to make it happen. I could see Augsburg because they're kind of a classic mid-table outfit, which is where we should be these days. So I don't know. Yeah, sure. Why not?
All right. I'm going to ask him, and then I'm going to come back, and I'm going to tell you why you're wrong. How's that sound?
I'm looking forward to it.
All right. We'll talk to you in part 3. Welcome to part two of this episode of Outpatient Stuttgart Americana. We're going to get some help with Hannes. Now, Hannes has been on the program a couple other times and given us a little bit of insight. We joked one of the episodes ago that Hannes was our inside man. So, Hannes, how comfortable are you being the number one intel gatherer for this podcast? Is that a position you like to have, or is that a little too much power?
It's not too much power. It's flattering, I would say, and probably still not really a high standard, I guess. Hey, it's fun. I love it.
Yeah, we have pretty low standards around here, so that fits in, that fits in pretty well. What we want to have you on today is to talk about Derby. So we're just coming off, as Matt and I talked about in part one, that fantastic last minute victory over Augsburg. And both the clubs are from Southern Germany. Both clubs have a little Schwabian background to them. But we weren't really sure if it's a derby. And where does Stuttgart kind of lie in this whole derby situation? Because in the U.S., we have rivals and we have teams we like to play and like to get wins against. So we kind of want to dive into that a little bit when we look at Germany. So what do you say? You got a few minutes for us?
Yeah, it sounds great.
All right. So first off, let's just break this down. What, in your mind, is a derby from a German perspective?
So, yeah, I think it's interesting because a derby used to be like you can have that on a really low level regional basis. Like when I played in the lowest soccer league ever in Germany, we had a big derby against the neighboring town. So it definitely has some regional aspect. But then I think it's also something where like clubs are equal. So when it goes over the regional aspect, you think of more like what teams are competing against another on a regular basis. And that's when you get then away from the regional aspect of a derby.
In the United States, you have famous rivalries in Major League Baseball, the Yankees and the Red Sox, for example, New York City versus Boston, or as Matt will attest to on the podcast, he's from Michigan. So Michigan football versus Ohio State football, you know, it's very regional. So I think in many ways, there's a regional competition that kind of drives the whole thing. You know, we're the best, you know, for the NFL, Ohio has Cleveland versus Cincinnati or Cleveland versus Pittsburgh. So it's regional more than I think anything else, which is interesting because what I'm going to talk to Matt about in part three is the match that we have coming up against Borussia Mönchengladbach. And it's interesting. Their stats are almost identical to each other in terms of championships they have, in terms of how long they've been in the league. But I don't think there's anybody on the planet who thinks that's a rivalry or a derby,
yeah, no,
you know, at all. And so that kind of got us thinking, is Augsburg a derby for Stuttgart? Because it doesn't seem like it is, but it could be. Let's start with this. What are the big derbies, the big rivalries in Germany that get people all fired up?
I think the biggest one is still Dortmund against Schalke. When I grew up as a kid, this was the only true derby in Germany. And then the term derby got a little bit more used and got a little bit more comfortable with that term. And then we thought, hey, Hamburg-Bremen maybe is a cool derby because they're both from the north, even though if they're not really close to another, but there are not that many other clubs around. And then obviously you have Bayern against 1860 München, because they played for a really long time in the first league and they're a really old traditional club as well. Like when I was in Munich, a lot of people told me like the original people from Munich are 1860 fan because that's the older club of those two, which I thought was interesting. But yeah, and when you talk about other derbies right now in Germany, I would think I would also count Dortmund against Bayern for sure.
Mm. Yeah, in the United States, they called the Der Klassiker, and I'm not. You know, I haven't been a supporter for as long as you have. I can't get too fired up for that. There's the Don't Poke the Bear podcast, which is a supporters group. He's actually based out of Cleveland where I live, and he gets really fired up for the Union Berlin derby, which I guess wasn't really a derby for a long time, but now that Union's so good, it's becoming. So in that pantheon of derbies, then where does Stuttgart's big rival within the Bundesliga clubs, let's just stick with the 17 other clubs in the top tier, who do you think or who is the big derby, the big rival with Mbappe Schubert?
To disappoint you, but right now I don't think we have one with any other Bundesliga club. I think there are some interesting storylines, but I don't think we have that Bayern 1860 or Dortmund Schalke or even Union Berlin, Hertha Berlin. When I grew up, VfB and Bayern definitely had a rivalry or like a big derby. I know it was always named the South Derby or something.
Yeah.
But I think that was more due to that Stuttgart was in the 90s very good, had this young, amazing team with Balakov, Elba, and Bobic, for example. And then Munich, oh, then Bayern just made it a habit of always getting the best Stuttgart players signed. So that's how a big hate towards Munich developed. I remember when we were watching soccer, my parents always told me, you want to see that Stuttgart wins, but almost as important it is that Bayern loses. So Bayern kind of developed towards more progression, getting bigger, more significant, and Stuttgart, unfortunately, is not the number two in Germany anymore. So I'm not really sure if I would still count that a big derby, because it's just like the clubs developed into different directions.
It's interesting you say there's two things there. The first one is I'm going to interpret the fact that we have no rival in the Bundesliga as a fact that we are the superior club. We have no rivals because we're so good. That's one way to look at
That's
it.
That's the reason.
The second thing is I've read what you have just said is that one of the reasons why Bayern is so good is that whenever a number two club starts to compete with them, Bayern gobbles up and buys those players from the competing club. And we saw that with Dortmund in the 2010s. It sounds like the same thing happened with Stuttgart. So I remember when Benjamin Pavard played for Stuttgart and it became known during the season that he was going to sign with Bayern. That was kind of the first time where I was like, okay, I get it. I don't like you guys now. Just leave us alone. Let us go about our business. Stop, you know, picking apart our team. So I could understand that. What about, though, if we stick with the area? So Stuttgart is in the state of Baden-Württemberg. There's a number of clubs there, right? Well, you have TSG Hoffenheim in the first division. You have Augsburg, obviously, in the first division. You've got Freiburg, who is just tearing up the first division. Of those three, do any three of those get people's blood boiling? Does anybody look forward to playing any of those clubs?
I mean, you have the storyline between traditional clubs and new investor-driven clubs. And there you have Hoffenheim in Baden-Württemberg. So, like, it gets your blood boiling, but not because you think, like, this is a cool game against them and we hate them. No, we just don't like the way they came to the Bundesliga. They did it not due to performance. They did it due to a lot of money and investments. So, but I would never call that a derby. And I don't think every Stuttgart fan would call it a derby. But every two Hoffenheim fans, so all of them, they would call it probably a derby. Because they're obviously interested to kind of legitimize their existence. And then they would call it a derby and stuff. But I don't think everyone in Stuttgart would call it a real derby. You would call it maybe a local game or whatever you want to call it. But I would not call it a derby at all with Hoffenheim. And I think Freiburg is a really interesting case because it should be a derby, right? Like we've been both for a really long time in the first league. We've been Baden and Württemberg, so that's already there. But for some reason, it doesn't feel like it. And I think it is just due to the size of the city of Freiburg. Like, and also the history of the club. It was always the smaller club. It was always the one that's like happy just to be in the first league. And yeah, when they get relegated down, they don't fire their coach. They don't crazy. When they have a good player, they sell them. And then they just keep doing whatever they were doing before. Mm-hmm. And that changed obviously in the last 5 years because Freiburg became better and better. And now they're objectively better than Stuttgart. So it could maybe develop into a derby, but just from the size of the town, like how many fans are traveling to Stuttgart from Freiburg and how many fans are traveling from Stuttgart to Freiburg. And that's just such an unequal yeah, unequal relationship. So I think because of that, we would not call that a derby, at least yet, just because of the, yeah, the size of the club, the amount of fans they have, and the size of the city.
It seems like from the outside looking in, that Freiburg is just this club that everybody loves. Everybody loves the city. Everybody loves the club. Everybody loves Strike. Everybody's rooting for them. And so it seems like it's hard to get any kind of emotion and anger or any of that towards Freiburg at all. I do remember when we were relegated the second time, maybe it was the first time, I can't remember which, and Freiburg was coming up or Freiburg stayed in the league, that they put up some pretty snarky comments about, you know, who's really the traditional club now, who's really the best club in the area. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe something's starting now. But I agree with you. It's just weird. It's Austin, who's on the podcast, is the Freiburg supporter. He runs the fan group out in Northern California. And even he and I have a hard time rooting against each other. We like each other's club. So let's go to the one that a lot of people dislike because they don't play fun football. They somehow always end up in the league. They're always predicted to get relegated, but they never get relegated. Let's talk about Augsburg, who we just were able to get the victory against recently. We just tied up the series. I think we each have 11 wins against each other at this point. They're an interesting club because do they see us as a rival, or do they, because they're close to Bayern, see Bayern as a rival, or do they see anybody as a rival and they're just trying to survive every single year?
Yeah, Augsburg is really a tough one to define, I think. Obviously, we were both Schwaben, so that's kind of where you could come from that regional aspect, even though we're not in the same state, but those are Bavarian Schwabens, and nobody likes them. Nobody likes the way they play soccer, but for some reason, they stay always in the league. Those are interesting storylines, but not a derby, I would say.
No, I remember that. I forget how many coaches in a row it was. I know it was Zorniger. I know it was Weinsrell.
Labadia earlier, too, already.
Okay.
A couple of years earlier. Yeah.
Yeah, you would go to Augsburg and you wouldn't come back. It was
Weinsiel, too.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it was crazy. So, all right. So it looks like even though, you know, there's some southern, you know, we could call it a little rivalry, but it's not a huge derby there. So maybe do we have to go down another level to the second, the Zweite Liga, or even the third tier?
Yeah, I think when you look at the lower leagues, you find more traditional derbies. For example, the one against Karlsruhe is still the biggest derby we ever had. And Karlsruhe was a long time in the first league, and they have been again for a couple of years in the 2000s. So against Karlsruhe, you really have this hate derby. Like, no, you always root against Karlsruhe. You always are happy when they lose.
I know that our byline, one of them, is that we are uninformed. I do have to say, even I knew that Karlsruhe was and part of it was when we were in the second tier, I remember when the games were taking place on the road at Karlsruhe and then on the road at Stuttgart, and the mayors of both cities at the time basically put out a plea for people to please behave, please be good. And I remember when, I think it was Asano, he only scored two or three goals in the entire second division, but they were all against Karlsruhe. And the one year, I think we swept them and people were just excited beyond belief. There was a famous video, I'll have to post it when we post this episode, of an American football player who was over in Stuttgart playing for their American football team. And he decided to go to a Bundesliga match. And he just randomly got a ticket and he video recorded it. It was about 20 minutes. And he recorded, the only ticket he could find was in the visiting section. And so he ended up in the Karlsruhe section and he was just like, what is going on? What is happening? They had to walk in a particular area. They
went out
of the stadium until things had cleared out. But you really got a sense of how just rabid that that derby was. Why is that a derby? Why is that the number one derby? Or it seems to be the number one derby for Stuttgart.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Karlsruhe, I don't want to lie, but I think they're one of the more like the founding clubs of the league, or at least they've been always like kind of there. And obviously then there's that whole Baden-Schwaben rivalry, and that we are now one state, but we haven't used to be, like, just like, I think we became a state in the 50s, a combined state. Before that, we were different competing states. So it's kind of like Michigan, Ohio, maybe. And now think of that, you guys would be one state together. So I think it comes basically from, yeah, from history, but also there's just a big tradition between those clubs and those regions. And yeah, Karlsruhe was the other meaningful club in that region. So it is naturally Karlsruhe. And also Karlsruhe is kind of like the, I think it's the second biggest town in Baden-Württemberg. It's also just a big town.
Yeah, it's a little bit, there's a great book by Uli Hess called Tor. And if you're an American, it's a great history of the Bundesliga and getting an idea of some of the clubs that started the league in the 60s and the clubs that have been around for a long time. And yeah, Karlsruhe was one of them. They had some amazing players too. They were a legit club for a long time. If you're new to the Bundesliga, like many Americans are, you don't realize how good that club was. And then when you tie in what you just said about how after World War II in the 1950s, a lot of areas in Germany were put into states. And I believe they had a vote between whether Baden-Württemberg should be just one state. And it was kind of contentious. The vote passed, so there was one state. I love your example, Ohio and Michigan coming together. And to the point where I think if I read this right, the people from Baden tried to have a revote so they could form their own state again, because that's how unhappy they were with that. And eventually, you know, it eventually failed. But so that's the number one. What about, a lot of us were really excited because when the Pokal was going on, the Stuttgarter Kickers, the other club from the city of Stuttgart, made it past the first round. And there was this brief moment of hope that we would actually play each other in the second round. And unfortunately, it didn't happen. Where did the Stuttgarter Kickers rate on that that level? I think they're in the fourth tier right now. Are they ahead of Karlsruhe or behind them?
I think they must be behind them for sure. Yeah, in terms of a derby, I think the Stuttgarter Kickers are really interesting because they have traditionally really good youth teams. So on the, like, not for the adult soccer, but for the younger youth teams, they were often playing in one league. Especially when I grew up, Stuttgarter Kickers was like the number two club in that region. And often many former VfB players come from Stuttgarter Kickers to VfB. So there's that. For sure. And obviously the same city, that's always kind of a big rivalry, even though Stuttgart Kickers was just, like, I think for 2 years in the first league in the 90s. So there's not a big rivalry because of that we are equal teams. But I think when you think of, like, that we have a lot of Stuttgart Kickers players that all are called VfB players. Now nobody talks about Stuttgart Kickers when you talk about Klinsmann or Bobic. But I think that's interesting. So, and I want to compare it. It may sound arrogant, but it is maybe if a Chihuahua barks at a German shepherd, you know, like, so when you are in the region where the Stuttgarter Kickers are from, they hate VfB. They watch the VfB games just to see them lose, and they would be happy if you get relegated. But do I really care if Stuttgarter Kickers playing in the third or fourth league? I don't even know. So,
yeah. You sound like a Bayern fan talking about a Stuttgart fan right now, is what you sound like. Oh,
that's a big insult. Please don't say that again.
I remember I watched them play Frankfurt, and they lost 2-0 in the second round of that Pokal match. But the announcer said that the Kickers were playing on what was the longest continuously used pitch in Germany. So they got some history. Oh, wow. You know, there for them. But, yeah, so that's something there. What about the other clubs in the area? I mean, I know there's Heidenheim almost got promoted a year or two ago. I think there's Sandhausen, who is always struggling to stay in the second tier.
I think it's still Bayern for sure, because it is just that grown hate when you grow up that I can't just put aside, even though I know for sure they're not looking at us the same way as we look at them. But yeah, no, that's a game I really don't want to miss. just because also, I mean, it ended kind of with Gomez, right? When Gomez transferred to Bayern, that was the last time my heart was broken, really, when a player switched clubs. And after that, it was kind of over.
I kind of want to say there is maybe that, I mean, I've read this, that when Gomez transferred to Bayern, that it broke a lot of Stuttgart hearts. But when Sami Khedira was moved on, or I don't know if he transferred or moved on, he moved on to play outside of Germany, right?
Yeah.
That people in Stuttgart were totally fine with that, totally okay with that.
Yeah.
Let's look at a Gregor Kobel example. We love Gregor Kobel, in part because, you know, we're still trying to fill that hole a little bit. But he just moved up the road to Dortmund. I mean, would it have been different had he gone to Leipzig or Bayern? I mean, give me your thoughts on that. Are there any players that have left that have just gone from we love them to now we can't stand you because of their transfer moving on? And by them moving, they've created a rivalry, a derby with that team.
That's a good question. So I think the thing about Khedira is he went to Real Madrid, one of the best clubs in the world, and obviously outside of Germany. With Gomez, it is he went to our direct rival. And in this year, we finished, I think, third or fourth in the league, and Bayern finished second behind Wolfsburg. So there was this close, like we were equal again, somewhat equal, at least in this one year. And then he is going over there and scoring goals two times against us per year. if Kobel would have moved on to Bayern, that's an interesting question. For sure, you would hate him more than you do now. Right now, I think like it's kind of acceptable. Yeah, it makes sense. It's a perfect club for him to make the next step. Mm-hmm. If he would have went to Bayern, in case of Neuer would have moved on, because if Neuer would have not switch the club, then you would say, like, why do you go from Stuttgart to sit on the bench to Bayern? So that, but let's say just Neuer wouldn't be there anymore, then I feel like Stuttgart fans would still understand it. But obviously, we're a little bit more happier seeing him in Dortmund than in Bayern. And I think about Leipzig, there's like, again, this Leipzig is like this one hate club that like everyone hates just because they just bought their licenses from a different club and then moved up really quickly with a lot of money, with a big corporation behind them. So you don't like any player playing for them, yeah. I don't think.
Maybe at some point in the future, we'll have you on to talk about why Hoffenheim, Leipzig, to a certain extent, maybe Wolfsburg are kind of seen as these, you use the phrase plastic clubs that just don't have the same history and tradition as the rest of the Bundesliga clubs. It's interesting because Timo Werner, he went on to Chelsea. He's back at Leipzig now. I wonder, had he moved from Stuttgart to Chelsea immediately, if he would get a little bit more love from the Stuttgart faithful, or if going to Leipzig just cemented the fact that we don't have a lot of love for that guy.
I don't think we had anything against him before he moved on to Leipzig. Like, if he would have went right directly to Chelsea, everybody would understand we just got relegated. You go to this one big, or not to this one big, but to a very big club in England, for sure. Like, yeah, I totally get that. But going to Leipzig was like, out of all clubs, you had to go there. You could have really used the second year Bundesliga, maybe. He didn't need it, clearly, because he was awesome at Leipzig. But still, that was how it felt for me. Like, this was one of the players I wanted to build this team around again. And then he's going to Leipzig, like this club that just bought themselves in.
Yeah, for me, the Bayern match is always tough because the expectations are always pretty low. which makes it an easy Saturday a lot of times because you're not really expecting too much. The one that I tend to get kind of fired up for is Augsburg. I don't know why. They are a tough club that plays tough football, which I respect. But I always feel that we should be able to beat them. And I think maybe that's just my tradition bias. You know, I think what you said is interesting, and we'll kind of cap off with this, is Freiburg, Hoffenheim, Augsburg have only really been up in the top tier, 10, 15 years, something like that, you know, among them. And at one point, Stuttgart was the number one club in that area, no questions asked. Yeah. And over the last 10, 15 years or so, there's been a lot of questions that have been asked. And those other three clubs have, at least in the case of Freiburg and Hoffenheim, have really try to answer them as to who is the dominant club in that part of Germany. And it'll be interesting if over the next 5 or 10 years, if those two clubs can continue their ascendancy, and if Stuttgart continues to struggle, but hopefully can at least get mid-table, maybe that does turn from a friendly rivalry to more of a heated derby.
Yeah, I think I could see that just from that. Like, if I just always look at it from the perspective how it was when I was a child. How do I learned about the Bundesliga? How do I learn? Like, what did my brother tell me? Which are the clubs I have to hate? You know. So if we have now kids growing up with, that's total normal that Freiburg is ahead of Stuttgart. It's total normal that Hoffenheim is a little bit ahead of Stuttgart. So maybe those kids that are growing up now, they see that more as kind of like a rivalry, where while I see it, look at this as more like, yeah, they're right now ahead of us. It will change again.
Well, Hannes, maybe between your children and my children, we can get them to grow up
and hate Freiburg.
Yeah, that sounds like a terrible goal, but you know, maybe we're not very good parents. So we'll see how that goes. You know, before we wrap it up, and I'm going to let you go, I'm going to go on to part 3 and 4 here. Matt and I are going to dive into the Gladbach match that's coming up, and we're going to we've got the Hertha Berlin match too. It coming up in really quick succession. You only got about 2 minutes left here. What do you think of those two matches? We're on the road at Gladbach on Friday, and then I think it's either Tuesday or Wednesday. The quick turnaround, we play. To play Hertha. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I feel like we're right now in such a weird situation because, like, we all think, like, it didn't make sense to call Wimmer, like, just like a coach that just does the training, and now he is, like, one of the candidates who takes over. So it is super weird right now to look at this, at these games and have really expectations, because you think, like, they didn't have expectations for Wimmer, right? And now they all of a sudden have. So I just look at it really without any expectations. We got the points we needed against Bochum and against Augsburg. I think we should get points against Berlin. And Gladbach is kind of like an additional match where I hope we play good and where I think we can win, of course. Yeah, it is kind of a weird state right now, not knowing who's the new coach and what direction we want to go as a club.
Yeah, I think weird is the best way, you know, to put this. It's Friday night. Oh, let me wrap up with this. You know, the Friday night matches, are those a big deal? We just had Monday night football in the U.S. Monday night football. The Cleveland Browns played the Cincinnati Bengals. So Ted, who was on last week, and I had some friendly banter going on the side while that was going on. Monday night football in the United States is a big deal. You know, it's the only game that's on. Anybody who's watching American football is watching that. Are the Friday evening matches in the Bundesliga a similar situation? Do people get really excited for that, or would they rather they be on Saturday?
Rather on Saturday is the quick answer. Like, the first game of the year, that's on Friday, obviously. That's the one everybody watches, because the team that wins the league before hosts this game, or at least is involved in this game. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a cool one. Also, it's the first game after you had a long break. But no, like, there's nothing special for us fans about, like, being the only game watched, because it is not like, you know, when you have your 12 o'clock football games, you kind of have your regional games, but it's really hard to watch games that are out of the region, right? So when I lived in Upper Michigan, it was hard for me to watch Minneapolis games, like Vikings games, because always Green Bay was on. But you don't have that in with the Bundesliga. You can watch the game you want to watch.
Okay.
At Saturday at 3:30. So I don't think it has any special thing for us. If at all, we're getting annoyed because now other pay TV channels have the rights to show them. So it's really hard for us in Germany, or it was really hard for us in Germany, to kind of be able to watch all games. And so we would get annoyed if our team is outside of the traditional times when a game starts.
Now, speaking of annoying, I called every Cleveland pub and bar that I could to see if they had ESPN Plus, and they all told me to stop calling. So I'll be home watching. Maybe someday they'll be on some better cable network, but that's all right. I'll be watching after school and check out. Hopefully, like you said, no big expectations, but you know what? See what happens, and then clear the rest of the weekend for some other Bundesliga act.
For sure. Sounds great.
All right, Haas. Thanks so much for your help with derbies this week. Hopefully the next time we talk to you, we got a couple more wins and maybe we even know who our coach is by then.
Sounds great. It'd be a pleasure.
Sounds good, man. Thanks again. All right, Matt, we're going to let you out of your timeout. Did you learn anything from that?
Yeah, I wasn't really paying attention.
Sounds like every one of my students. Well done, sir. Thanks again to Hannes, who gave us some more help this week about derbies and what they mean and all that stuff. And Matt, he disagreed with you. Augsburg to him is not, it's a rivalry. It's not a derby, though. But he does think, you know, Bayern, you know, historically could is one. But he brought up an interesting point that if Freiburg, Hoffenheim, and Augsburg really haven't been in the league that long in the top tier, where Stuttgart has been for 40-some years. But we both agree that if Freiburg, Hoffenheim, and Augsburg continue to be better than Stuttgart over the next 40 years, then maybe those will turn into a rivalry.
I can see he made some good points about the historical rivalry with Bayern and how the clubs were eye level in the 90s. And that's just some context that we lack. So I can see that. Now it doesn't feel like a rivalry or about a derby because it feels like we're just going to get pantsed every time we show up against the Bavarians. But Augsburg, yeah, I don't know. I will defer to Hannes on this as a more knowledgeable person than I am in this arena.
I'm not going to allow you to do that, sir. American exceptionalism, as you mentioned a couple episodes ago, we are exceptional being dumbasses. Let me ask you, I do think Augsburg is, from a personal level, I do always get excited when we play the Flaming Pineapples, just because they're nearby. They're a team that I think we should beat, but we don't always beat them. In fact, it's 50-50. I can't root against Freiburg. It's not in my nature. And Hoffenheim is to me. So if I'm looking at some of those clubs, it's probably Augsburg, Mainz, maybe. Which one do you get kind of hot and bothered by?
I don't like Mainz. I hate how Mainz plays. Their logo's stupid. I don't like Mainz. I don't like them. They beat us in the relegation playoff when they shouldn't have, and that made me mad, and I won't let it go. So I'm more anti-Mainz, but I can get on board the Augsburg's a derby bandwagon.
Well, we'll wrap up before we move on to questions and headlines. Both Hannes and I agreed that as he and I have small children, as do you, that we can raise our children to hate Freiburg. And is there anything more proud as a parent to raise your child to dislike or hate something? Are we doing a good job as parents in that regard?
I think we're doing excellent. And as a point of demonstration for this, to get to my in-laws who live in Eastern Pennsylvania, we have to drive through your state of Ohio. And we got out of the car one night, at one of your lovely bathroom rest stops, and one of my girls asked why it stunk. And it's because there's a giant big rig just over the way, and that's why it stunk. But instead of telling her the truth, I said, it's because we're in Ohio, honey. The entire state smells like this. So now every time we're going to Ohio, they say, oh, the place that smells bad. And I go, yes, that's right.
This is going to be the first time I'm ever going to curse on the podcast. I'm adverse to cursing. This is the first
I'm
time
bracing
I'm
myself.
Well, it's not. I was getting off a plane from San Francisco to Cleveland. I was the last person off the plane because I don't rush off the plane. What's the point of rushing off the plane? Once you're home, whatever. So I was the last person off, and they must have just forgot that I was getting off the plane. And I'm walking off towards the front, and the co-pilot and the pilot are there. And the co-pilot kind of looks outside and sniffs, and he's like, God, it smells like shit. And the pilot says, well, we must be in Cleveland. Hey, I'm still here. You can't do that.
Hi, guys.
So apparently it's not just in the rest stops on the highway. It's also in the airport. So
whole state.
I'm glad we have a common theme here. Oh, boy. Sorry about that, kids. If you're listening, you know, Uncle Travis is upset. Sorry. All right, Matt.
Travis is a potty mouth.
Yeah. The fact your uncle is Travis is probably a bad idea, too. All right, let's move on to part three with this. All right, we got headlines and questions. Do you want to start with headlines first or questions first? What do you want to do?
Let's do the headlines because I think it's going to be short and sweet.
There's nothing. It's been a quiet week. It's awesome. I mean, the only headline was one I made up was as I was watching the match and I saw Sven Mislintat walk off the pitch with what was a Stuttgart jersey. And usually players exchange jerseys. And I think it was an Ada Carazor jersey. I cannot confirm that. I just thought that was super weird, super bizarre. And in light of everything that's happening, kind of ominous.
I just saw, I think maybe you posted it on Twitter, a picture of Sven walking across the pitch with a jersey in his hand. But I didn't get the context of that at all. And it'd be interesting to know what happened and what went down and why, but we'll probably not find that out.
No, our inside source isn't working. All right, so let's get to some of the questions that we got. Now, these are broken up into two categories this week. One is about players. One is about the coaching situation. Let's start off with the players, and then we'll end with the coaching situation that never ends here. Captain Armadillo said, now this is from last week, and this may not be fair to him, but I like this question. We forgot to answer it last week. He's like, why is Tomas Thiago on any starting squad? Should Tomas be a starter, a bench player? Should his time be limited, expanded? What do you think?
I think he can be a starter. I think he's got the physical tools. I think he lacks the mentality. And we've seen games where he kind of checks out or doesn't seem to be going at 100%. He was doing that early this season for us where he just had games where he was invisible. I sure liked what he did off the bench. So maybe his role is a guy who comes in and just runs like crazy for the last 30 minutes and punishes a tired defense. And if that's the case, like, I'm totally fine with that.
It's crazy because when he showed up, I thought he did not have the mentality to be a bench player. Because when we got him, he was kind of our offensive savior, which is so unfair because I think he's 19 at the time. But I'm with you now. I think he's like an early substitution 30-minute guy who's got pace. He's creative. I think he's falling into that trap of we don't know what position he plays. Because if you have Luca Pfeiffer and Gerassi up front, he's not going to play up there. And Silas is probably a better offensive player than Thiago is. So I'm a little confused. Is Thiago a winger? He's not a number 10 per se, but I don't think he's a striker. I don't know exactly where he goes, but I love his passion. I love his pace. I love his creativity. But you're right. There are times where it just seems like over a 60 or 70 minute period, there are these lapses where he seems invisible.
Yeah, I think he could play anywhere in the attacking mid, and he's definitely got the pace to play on the wing. His crosses haven't always been the best, and the decision-making isn't always the best, but he's good in tight spaces. So if you can put him in an attacking midfield role, maybe kind of like a false nine type spot, I can see him having a lot of success there. And you're probably right. The fact he's been moved around the field and given different responsibilities in different games has probably hindered his development. So maybe our next head coach can pick a task for him and set him to it and just let him go and be successful on one thing for a little while.
Ben Duncan asks, we seem to disagree on two players. I don't like what I see of Luca. His movement doesn't help if he can't finish because we only have one player playing off him. I think he's referring to Gerassi. Hope he turns it around, though. I'm also higher on Daxo than you guys are. He seems to grow into games. Thought he and Ito were a mess. So let's break this down into two parts. Let's start off with Luca first. We have both been very critical of Luca as the season started. Mm-hmm. I thought he played brilliant in this Augsburg match. I think you said it, he's not a Sasa Kalajic. He's not going to play with his head. He's playing with his feet a little bit more, but he was holding the ball up. He had some really good passes, and I think he's right there. I think this isn't an Al Gudui situation. This isn't even a Simon Torota situation. Mm-hmm. I think Luca Pfeiffer is a Bundesliga level player. I don't know if he's a starter, but I think he's a Bundesliga level player. And I think he just needs the dam to break and get that goal, because he had 3-4 amazing chances that but for luck or amazing goalkeeping would have gone in. So let's start off with Luka. Your thoughts?
I think if Pfeiffer's playing in a setup that's got two at the top, like we had on Saturday, I think he's a really dangerous player. I don't think we can rely on him at this point to be the lone striker up top and the creator of all things offense, but he was making a lot of really good runs. He was really pressuring the defense and even the goalie and just generating some havoc, which will open space up for Gerassi, and Gerassi can kind of play that poacher role and hang back a little bit. Or that's something that we saw Tomáš be really successful with. You know, maybe he can come in from that attacking mid while Gerassi and Pfeiffer are wreaking havoc and create some stuff. So I think he's got what it takes. It's going to be a mentality thing for him. He seems to have the tools, and I think he can do it. And I'm going to disagree that his movement doesn't help. His movement helps a lot. That creates openings for his teammates. It creates channels for balls to go in. There's a lot. We saw this somewhat with Koulibaly when he was just an agent of chaos mode. If the team thinks that, at least the opponent thinks that he's going to do something, they've got to account for him. So Pfeiffer needs to do enough to force the opponent to account for him, but he doesn't have to do everything all the time.
Somebody wrote this on Twitter that of his 17 goals that he scored in this Vita Liga last year, only two were with his head. So he is not a Sasha Kalajic at all. Like you and I kind of thought he was going to be a poor mm-hmm. man version of that. He doesn't score with his head, basically. He gets in the box and he's more of a Simon Toroda, where he scores with his feet and his body in there. What I liked is we seemed to play to his strength on Saturday, meaning we were direct, let him hold it up, and exactly what you said, he would hold it up and then he would pass it off to Gerassi or Ahamada or something like that, and we could make plays off of that. The other thing I liked about him, and this is a big Simon Toroda thing, this episode brought to you by Simon Toroda's mom, is he was all over the pitch. That dude left nothing. He was playing offense, defense, and I think Silas was subbed off after a while because he was like, you know what, I don't know if I need to track back that much. He still has a ways to go. Let's not build a statue of him yet. But
yeah,
I disagree with you, Ben, there. I also disagree with you on Dan Axel. And I'll take the lead on this one, Matt. I don't get it. I get the signing. I 100% get that. I don't understand I think the fast track of him into the lineup was a desperation move. And there's been a couple desperation moves this club has done. Pellegrino, where are you? Mm-hmm. That you can say, whoa, I don't know if a lot of forethought was put into this decision. I don't, unless somebody can sit me down and say, listen, Ito and Dan Axel play completely differently, and that's why we had to put Dan Axel in over Ito. Okay, I'll listen to that. I haven't seen Ito play poorly enough. He made a mistake on Saturday, but I mm-hmm. haven't seen him play poorly enough to get benched. And I've seen Dan Axel make a number of mistakes. Now, where I will agree with Ben is he did grow into the match. As the game went on, those errors subsided. The second half, his clearances were much better. But the first half, boy, I honestly thought he was going to be subbed out after the first half. That's how rough of a start he had.
He was bad. Just straight up, he was bad. And the only thing I can think is there must have been some lingering knock that one of the other guys had, and that's why Dan Axel was pushed into service so fast. And he did get better as the game went on, but that's not saying much. That's like saying the Cleveland Browns improved as their season progressed.
Because it was almost over, that's why.
Yeah, well, when you start really bad, you've got nowhere to go but up, right? So the one thing that I will say to Ben Duncan is that's an amazing name. Ben Duncan is a solid name, and I love it. I'm a little jealous.
Yeah, Ben's Twitter, I don't know what you call it, logo, profile, his picture, is a super athletic picture of him on the golf course. I mean, at this point now, I think I'm going to agree with Ben on everything, because he could definitely defeat us at whatever mano e mano challenger was. So, Ben, you are 100% correct. Don't you
worry. You changed my mind. Now I don't like Ben. I was on board with him. Now I'm out.
All right, man. So we've got two choices for coach right now. I like this. So Bloody Has asks, do you think Mishi Wimmer could work as a permanent option as head coach? And also, Yogi Löw is in the crowd for the game. And in Discord, there seems to be a mixed opinion on him. Do you think he would be a good move? And there were a number of people from Coghai to Flabby Viking to Carl Johnson who all said, no, no, no. Although Flabby, he did say if Yogi can stop his tradition of, how should we say, picking
his mining.
Yeah, coal mining. Then, if you don't know what we're talking about, just Google Yogi Löw and his nose. And there's some just, he forgets the camera's on at times. I'm going to start with Yogi Löw. No, I don't think that's an option at all. I think Yogi's time has gone. I know he said that he's holding out for a head job still. I would be shocked if Stuttgart said, Yogi, we want you back for a second time. Because he did coach the team back in the 90s when they won the Pokal. I would just – that would be so far out of left field. And I don't know enough about him to know, but I was never a huge fan of the way the German national team played, which is amazing because they also won a World Cup under him. So, yeah. I mean, I have tons of credibility.
I thought the year that Germany won the World Cup, I liked a lot of what he was doing with that team. But in hindsight now and being more into football and following more of the media and stuff, I've read more about the chaos that was going on behind the scenes with that group. And then the way that they fell apart for the next World Cup, he feels to me, and this is totally feelings ball, I've got no data here, he just feels like a national team manager. Like he's on the international stage to bring the guys in for a couple of weeks, I'll do a bunch of stuff with them, and then they go away and I watch a bunch of tape. Maybe it's because I wasn't watching him when he was coaching Stuttgart in the 90s. Because we didn't have televisions where I lived in Northern Michigan. But I don't know. I'm not big on that move. And I'm not big on the Wimmer long-term move either.
Yeah, I don't see Yogi as – I think that's more of a he goes to the games. And I think he was originally from the area. So it makes sense.
If you're Yogi Löw, you can probably show up to any football stadium in Germany and get a great seat in somebody's box with free food and drinks. And why wouldn't you? Like, what a better thing to do than take a train to a random stadium every weekend and go watch a game. That sounds like a lot of fun.
You know what? When I retired from coaching cross country, that's what I did. I just went to random cross country meets and they let me in for free. They don't charge entry to any of those.
These are inconsequential details.
I do love that Yogi's hair is, he's 70 something and his hair is darker than mine though. I mean,
oh yeah,
the guy is ageless there. The thing I didn't like about Yogi though is I like having a striker. I'm built that way. I like having somebody up front. And I think where he went south was he got rid of that traditional striker because they had Miroslav Klose when they were in Brazil. And then they tried to bring Mario Gomez back, you know, the 1 year and he was past his prime. And the Timo Werner thing really didn't work. I mean, obviously hope they do well in Qatar, but I don't know. Anyway, Wimmer, I think that's the more interesting question because we've got Gladbach coming up on Friday. Then you've got Hertha Berlin, then Leverkusen. And you would assume that the Hertha game is one we could get some points, but who knows? You know, we could go 0-9 or we could go 6-9. Here, I think there's so much. I think there's two parts of this. Would Wimmer be a good choice, or would he just be another version of Jurgen Kramny, who, you know, came along, did his best, but wasn't able to hold the team together during the Zorniger year when we were relegated? Or is it a case where we have to go with Wimmer because there's nobody else that's going to touch this club? Because let's play this out, Matt. We get to the Leverkusen match. It is the winter break for the World Cup. They sit down and they do negotiations they've got to start with Sven, right? And then after they do Sven, whether they keep him or they let him go, then you got to do the coach. But if they get rid of Sven, does Verrill already have guys in line that he wants to hire? I just think it's such like we talked about last episode, such a timing cluster. You may be stuck with Vimmer because there's nobody else that you've been so disorganized up to this point.
No, we've talked about this previously, but nobody's going to come work for a boss who's about to get the axe. Like that's a recipe for disaster. So they need to make the choice on Sven first, and hopefully they keep him. I'm just not excited about Vimmer. Like, it's nice that we're starting to get results, but these results feel like things that are overdue and that we're kind of in the Wile E. Coyote just ran off the cliff and hasn't fallen yet phase of Reno leaving, and that anybody could be getting these results because Vimmer's not doing anything really that different from what Reno is doing. Now, maybe this defensive stuff with the shifting around we were talking about earlier is a Vimmer adaptation. Maybe some of the slight changes we're seeing in the attack are, or maybe the players are just feeling a little more free to do what they want to do because they know they've got a substitute teacher. I don't know. I'm not excited about it. If they sign them, I hope it's to a like finish this season and next season contract and that's it, because he's unproven. And if I'm Vimmer and I'm offered that, I'm taking it.
Right.
Because who else is going to give me the opportunity?
Well, I wanted to bring this up in our headlines is our old friend Alex Zorniger was just hired by Greuther Fürth. So he's back in the Bundesliga, the Vita League. They got their first
one. The Angry Man.
Oh, man, that's such a great name. Isn't Zorniger translates to Angry Man in German, doesn't it? Or Angry?
That, yeah, every time I ran an article through Google Translate, it changed Zorniger to the Angry Man.
I want to change my name to Zorniger now. Travis Angry Man. I don't know. I'm so confused on this decision. I don't know what's going to happen. I could see Vimmer being the guy. I could. I'll disagree with you, I guess, just to do it. But I could also see this. I could see us going to Gladbach and losing 6-0 again. And then coming home and beating Hertha 2-1. And then losing to Leverkusen 6-0. I can't tell anything with this team. I can't tell anything with this coaching. I can't tell anything with the management. This is almost like an American sports team right now. Because in the United States, like when the Browns are bad, which is all the time, there's all this stuff you don't know. You know something's coming, but you don't know what it is. And I think over the last few years with Pellegrino and Sven, everything's been pretty transparent.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not. So I do think Vimmer can be the answer. Long pause, maybe. Don't know. So
a lot of confidence there, Travis.
Yeah, I apologize, Booty has. I don't know. And it goes back to what a lot of people said. And you said this before Reno was let go, is who do you replace? If you're going to let him go, who's your guy? So is our guy going to be this guy? So let's play this out. Is it going to be Jess? They're up out of the Danish league who's fired, who by all accounts runs the exact same system that Pellegrino ran. I mean, at that point, then what's the point?
The question then becomes, does he run it better? Again, it's the same system. And then, great, theoretically, we've got the personnel to run that effectively. If Jess does a more effective job of communicating what he wants or of player utilization or development, that could be a really smart move because you don't have to do a bunch of roster shakeup to get what the coach is comfortable with.
Yeah.
And you don't have a coach kind of flexing way outside of his comfort zone to try and fit to the players that he has. So I can see that making sense, but only if they think he's Reno +++.
I think that's a fantastic point. And I do like that idea. There are some teams in the United States, different sports teams, that they run a particular system and style, and then they find a coach who they think is going to implement that style. And I've always respected that. You know, you don't have to change the way you recruit players. You don't have to change your system. It's ingrained in them. And I think maybe that's a fair point. Before we wrap up and we move on to predictions for next week, if Vimmer somehow got 7 out of 9 points in these next 9 possible points, what would your thought process then be going into the World Cup?
I'm going to say it'd probably still be the same, that I wasn't real excited about it, but it depends on how we get those points, right? If these are gutsy matches that we're doing new innovative things we haven't seen out of the team before, and it's very clear that he's having an influence on the way that we're playing, then I'll probably change my tune and be excited about it. I just haven't seen enough of what looks like a Vimmer fingerprint on the team to feel pumped about him being on the touchline instead of, you know.
Well, unlike you, I agree with Carl Johnson on Twitter, who came up with the Vimmer mania. I 100% am in Vimmer mania. If he gets 7 out of 9 points, that's it. He's our coach for the rest of eternity, and that's it. Bundesliga champ.
Well, now I like Vimmer mania and want to get that on a t-shirt and the Hulkamania font, and we need to get Adrian on this.
Oh my gosh, that would be something. We could try to sell really bad t-shirts. Should we keep those with our what is it? Our Vimmer mania, Cramney crazies, Zorniger zealots. We could do all kinds of options like that. All right. Well, those are our questions and headlines. Not a lot of headlines, which is actually probably pretty good. Matt, you ready to move on to the big games next week and predictions?
Oh, I predict pain. Let's do it.
That'd be awesome. We can get Mr. T on the episode. Oh, right. Mr. T. All right. As we go to part four predictions, let's look at this. So we've got two matches coming up. We've got Stuttgart traveling to Gladbach on Friday. What's crazy about this one, Matt, is that they've had 100 total or Bundesliga matches. Stuttgart actually leads this one, 41 wins to 29. I was shocked by that. They're both five-time Bundesliga champ or German champions. They both won the Pokal three times. They're both won the Zweite Liga once. I mean, these are two clubs that have almost a DNA that is the same when it comes to titles and championships, and yet there's no rivalry here. There's no derby here. I know when they were really good in the 70s, Stuttgart was relegated for the first time in the 70s. Any thoughts on this match going in? When I hear Gladbach, I think, oh boy. But results based this year,
Yeah, they seem down, and we seem to be catching them at a good time. They've lost their last two. They drew one before that. I feel like this is a team that's ripe for the picking. I also feel like we don't normally beat Gladbach. So,
yeah, you would be right. So last year we won this one 3-2 at home. We were down 0-2 early, but Endo, Furich, and Kalajic, of course, brought the boys back. And then we drew 1-1 later. Dino had his famous power smash to put us up 1-0.
Yes.
And that goal was amazing. And then they came back to draw. So we got 4 points against them last year. And here's the funny thing. I think the exact same thing you do. I'll tell you right now, I'm picking Gladbach in this match simply because of name recognition. It's like in the NFL, the Patriots. I still pick the Patriots, even though it's not the same Patriots from the years ago. Stuttgart has 4 wins, 2 draws, and only 3 losses in the last 9 matches. Like you said, Gladbach's coming off that heartbreaking loss to Union Berlin the other day that everybody in Germany was rooting for, you know, who wants a table race here. It's 11th place, them, hosting 15th place, us. What do you think?
They're the home team, and my go-to, if I'm not sure, is just to pick the home team. So I feel like we're kind of up and down right now, and we just had an up. We're due for a down. I'm gonna pick Gladbach.
I'm with you on this. This is probably the first time I've picked against Stuttgart on the podcast. But as you know, in our text strands, I always change back and forth when I'm off the air with you. Yeah, I've had this weird sense that the home field advantage is just that for this club this year. And when they play at home, especially against teams that are bottom six, they perform. That's not the team I'm used to be quite honest. And so I'm going to take Gladbach. What do you think the spread is in this one there? They're hosting Stuttgart.
I'm going to say Gladbach by a half.
You nailed it. Yep. So we're both taking the, is it the fowls? Is that what they are? The horses?
The black and white stripy things? I don't know. Their logo is lame.
It's a, yeah,
I'm going to go out there and publicly say it. Their logo is lame.
This could be like that Cheers episode where the one character just picks, you know, football teams based on the mascot. I would think an alligator would, crocodile would do much better against a horse, but what do I know?
I take Fritzl in any fight, any day.
I did love during the match that Fritzl was in the huddle. And I know we mentioned this almost every podcast. I want to know. I need to know why that's a thing, because it's not a thing here. It's not even in high school sports a thing here. But there, Fritzl's in the huddle. I want to believe Fritzl's giving advice in the huddle.
I think secretly Fritzl's our head coach, and I'm okay with that.
Oh, we did say a couple episodes ago that it was one of the players who had a red card, and it was Pellegrino the one time. So maybe he's still here.
You know who knows about the Sven carrying the jersey thing? It's Fritzl. And what we really need to do is get a conversation going with Fritzl, but I got a feeling that he's a gator of few words and would not talk to us.
Oh, but like we told Ted last week, we've got some Schwab and vodka here that might get him going. We'll see.
All right, those chompers up.
Yeah. Neither of us are expected much against Gladbach on the road, but then we host Hertha Berlin midweek next week, and we may not be able to podcast before that match. So we're going to do our prediction now. So this is another even one that I was really surprised about. 76 total matches. It's 28 wins, 28 losses. It's funny because our history is significantly richer than Hertha's. They're a two-time champ, but that's pretty much it. They've barely been in Champions League, barely been in Europa League. There aren't a lot of big clubs that Stuttgart can kind of brag about their history title-wise towards, and Hertha's one of them, which kind of blows me away. And I'll admit, I don't know much about the history of Hertha Berlin, but they seem like they're a big city club. But, you know, we're right there with them. So what do you think? What do you think about this one next week?
Stuttgart by a million.
Well, we went.
Hertha's been down for a while. They've not been playing well. And I'm not sure how they got above us in the table, because I don't pay attention enough, I guess. But I think we're going to smash them.
All right. So right now they're 14th. We are 15th, but we both have 11 points. It's -3. We went 0-1-1 against them last year. We had an early 2-0 lead at home that we let up for the draw. And then in that huge game towards the end of the season, it was April, I think, they beat us 2-0 and they leapfrogged us. It looked like we were going to get relegated. I don't know about these guys. It's in the last 8 matches, we have 3 wins, 3 losses. This is as even, Steven, as you can get. The spread for this one is, you know, Stuttgart's at home. So what do you think it is?
I'm going to stick with my guns and say home team wins when it's going to be close.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the home team on this one. It's Stuttgart -0.5. I think it's going to be another really close one. I think it's going to be a tight one. The thing that scares me about Hertha is almost all their matches have been super close. And so they're a bad team, but they played super competitive matches. So they don't get blown out a lot. They've got Bayern right before us, though, so that could change that strategy.
Maybe Bayern will blow them out, and if they don't, we will.
Oh, shots fired. Does this go back to what your disagreement with Hannes about the Bayern rivalry?
Yeah, why not? Let's start a little controversy for the sake of the fact that we need something else to talk about.
Yeah, listen up, Ben Duncan. We got a word to say to you.
Ben Duncan and Hannes and everybody else who's being wonderful and contributing to this lovely little community we're building.
Right. How dare you help us make this somewhat listenable. Somewhat listenable. All right, Matt. We have pretty much talked about everything we can possibly talk about. Anything else before we wrap this up?
I'm hopeful to finish out the season on a high note with even if not wins, but some positive movement. Because it'd be really nice to be watching World Cup games, not thinking about Stuttgart doom and gloom in the back of my head.
Yeah, because everybody's super happy and excited about the World Cup that's taking place in that happy little place called Qatar.
Yeesh.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk about that next episode, because if there's one thing we do well, it's controversy. I don't know. All right. Oh, you know, we could cover the Michigan-Ohio war over Toledo.
Love it. I'm a big fan.
Which Ohio unfortunately won. Sorry about that.
Yeah, well, you guys got Toledo, but we got the entire Upper Peninsula, so.
I got to talk to our lawyers on that one. Matt, thanks so much for joining us this episode. Hopefully we'll be talking to you next time. It is for multiple victories, and we can start building that statue of Emmer. What do you say?
I'll keep my fingers crossed, Travis.